I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to part two of this episode of Move. Jamie, are you ready?
Dude, I'm always ready. I'm strapped in. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to be inspired, which is our word that we love to use.
Let's do this.
Part two of Move. Danny, I want to ask another question because you said that you won an innovative competition and you won £100,000 doing that. Firstly, what was the competition? How did you enter and how useful was that £100,000 at the beginning?
Yeah, so basically, also just to give the context, I had this great job. I was at Murray Stopes. I was head of research, working 4 days a week. I had a small baby at home. No plans to leave that job. No plans to do anything different, really. But then, yeah, this idea of LV just kept, you know, just kept nagging me in my head, and I just couldn't let go of it. I think the first thing I did actually was, I knew nothing, right? So I went and bought the Financial Times How to Start a Business 2013 book, and I thought it was going to tell me how to write a business plan because I don't know what a business plan is, but I'm sure it's going to tell me how to do this thing. I was expecting like, you know, step by step guides. Open chapter one, and it was asking me really hard questions. It was like, how much money do you earn? How much money do you need to earn? How much money do you want to earn? How's your life generally? And as I went through and I asked myself these like actually really personal questions, I put the book down. I was like, I'm not starting a business.
It's not for me.
It really put me, it basically taught me through how hard it is. And it's so hard from a financial perspective too. So I just basically put the book away. I was like, I'm not doing this. And then didn't think about it for about 6 months. And then actually through my job met a guy who worked at What If, so innovation consultancy. And I was like, I've had this great idea, but I can't tell you. Because also I was probably like a lot of the listeners out there, like you have this idea in your head and you kind of think it's so amazing, but you think if you tell anybody, they might steal this idea.
This is just another, a classic. We talk about it quite a lot, yeah.
And this guy, Meldrum Duncan, he just said to me, Tanya, like, you've got to go out and tell everybody about your idea. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, because look, if it's a great idea, you know, basically if it's a great idea, but somebody can steal it, then it's a shit idea, right? Because it means it's too easy to copy. And if somebody criticizes it, then all they're doing is they're breaking it down and they're improving it. So I started going out and talking to people, and that's when I realized my actual idea at the time, the service model, was not going to work. Kept sort of thinking about it. And then I met a guy, again, serendipity, who'd been like the manager of like the cool band at university, a guy called Tom Adeola. He'd started Meetail, and I was like, wow, he started a business. I need to go talk to him. And he just mentioned that he had won this R&D grant through Innovate UK, which was a government agency. That's all he told me. I literally just wrote down a note, Innovate UK. And I went home and thought, oh, I'm gonna do that. So I thought, I better take 4 days off work to fill in this application form. I took 4 days off work. I sat down with this like massive form and I looked at it and I was like, I don't even know what these questions are. Like, I had to write an essay on what's your exploitation plan. I was like Googling, what is exploitation plan? But again, you need to be also, you know, you need to constantly be creative and how you drag in other people who might know. So I was literally like, all right, I know a guy who works private equity. I'm going to get him to help me with the business bit. And then I realized I knew somebody who knew an engineer. Because, you know, the engineers were never very cool, right? So I didn't seem to know any engineers from university. And I managed to get him to help me write the tech bit. You know, you just blag it, right?
Yeah.
And I sent it off. Obviously, it took me a lot more than 4 days. But then, yeah, the morning I got the email saying you've won was just honestly, I think, one of the best days. And I like,
yeah,
because it had been this crazy idea in my head, and then suddenly to have a panel of judges say.
And was that the moment then that you quit. Went full time? Yeah. You quit your job and
quit my job then, and it helped, hugely, because from a validation point of view,
that's what I say, validating,
validation, you. And but also what you got to remember in the UK, like I think a lot of people in tech, they start getting obsessed with wanting the right type of investor, and I'd say maybe there's. Are not the right type of investor for early stages. And everybody wants the big name venture capitalist funds. But they're really difficult to get on board at the beginning. They also, they just sap so much of the energy and legal costs. So basically, what I always recommend is actually just going out. You've got to find the right people. But basically, angel investors are great. If you can just find individuals who are going to get behind you and your vision, So off the back of that, I raised the first 100K, another 100K.
It's amazing because I think that a lot of people want that validation at the beginning, that you have an idea and you go, well, I think it's a great idea. Yeah. Does anyone else think it's a great idea? And when you get that validation, that almost gives you the push. But there's also a lot of things there where you said it yourself, you were in a very comfortable job. It was a very successful job. You're doing very well. You were working 4 days a week. So it was quite good. You know, you had your baby, you were looking after that. And that's quite a nice position to be in. And you took that huge leap to leave it all behind.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people who have been through life and gone, I just never actually followed what I wanted to do because they were too scared. They were afraid of failure. They thought their idea wasn't good enough. There's always a moment in someone's life where they can take two paths and they can go, I can go and do that. And that's the risky path. Or I could probably stay on this one and I probably know what my life is going to be like. What gave you that push? Was it winning this money? Because still winning the money, you still go, oh, I don't really know what to do. You have to be pretty headstrong to go down that road, which you don't know where it's going to go, especially with a child as well, being a mother.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely winning the £100,000. That was the thing I needed. I mean, I'm the kind of person, I always just had loads of crazy ideas, but you need support around you, I'd say, especially if you've got a kid and everything. So my husband, you know, he's just always used to roll his eyes every time I had a bad idea. And then with this one, he was suddenly like, you have to do it as well. But also on that point, I do think, you know, people, entrepreneurs always say, leap before you lurk and just go for it and all the rest of it. But it's bullshit, right? Because you also need to, you need to aim for this wonderful new world that you don't know where you're going to get to, and you go for it and just throw yourself into it. But you also need to have a plan for if things go wrong. Like, I know that sounds a bit boring, but like, I did think through, if this fails, what am I going to do? And I kind of knew that I could go back to my job. And I also did have the luxury that time, actually, my husband, I knew his job was okay. So it kind of gave us that safety net. And I'm saying that from a point of also knowing that I was privileged to be in that position, because there are people out there who probably do have a great idea and would like to start a business, and it's tough, right?
Yeah. So I suppose that's probably what I'm asking, because, you know, exactly. And I like the honesty. Yeah, you came from a luxury position where you were able to do that. But for people who probably don't have that luxury and they don't have a plan B, would you... Because, I probably have my idea of what I would do, but I don't know what the right answer is. I really don't know. Should you go for it? Should you not? What would you say to those people who don't have the luxury? Actually, they are probably giving up everything in order to pursue this dream. What would you say to those people?
It's a hard question. No, look, you still need to go for it. The reality is it's going to be tougher, right? But in the same way, I could also say, like, going doing LV, like a vagina tech product, was tougher than doing fintech. You know, like, we didn't go for an easy option, right? You just have to work harder at it. You need to de-risk it still in some way. Obviously, if you haven't got a security net, maybe you need to... there's a strategy you've taken place that you'll need to work evenings and weekends probably. So really, you know, you need to get to a point where you're kind of more confident that your idea's got legs.
Yeah, I think that safety net that you talk about is actually really important, though, because if you don't have that in place, then are you ever really going to push yourself as hard as you perhaps could do if there was something to fall back on? And my idea would be that, you, as you say, you have to find ways around that. So whether that's downsizing or reducing your outgoings or working extra jobs to bring in extra revenue that makes normal life kind of move forward, I think is probably the way to do that, so that you keep moving.
And I did that too. I kept working like 2 days a week, and you know, you'd be a bit silly to throw yourself completely into everything and risk everything. But you've got to go for it still.
Yeah, I actually, again, with this, to keep going on about this talk last night, but I met this girl called Jamala who actually she grew up in a rough background. She then became one of the youngest bankers in the UK. She's 26 now. She was living in Whitechapel, renting, all these different things, came from a really broken home. And she's actually decided to quit everything because she wasn't challenging her enough. She thought it was not challenging me. She was sitting in board meetings with people. And she said that they, you know, that they weren't bad people. They were lovely people. They were just different to her. And she thought, I just don't really want to do this. And she quit everything. And she now does motivation speaking and different things like that, because that's what she's passionate about. And how important, because this is a big topic that we think, is purpose right in life. And how important is it to have a purpose? And do you feel like you have a purpose now?
So can I just go back to the last question for one second? So I think the other difference is, Jamala, she's 26, you said.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say is, like, anybody who's listening to this, you just got to do it as well before you have to think about mortgage, before you get married, before you have kids. Like, being an entrepreneur is all about risk taking. You're going to feel risk. You're going to have to do things which are going to make you feel so uncomfortable. You're going to feel this fear in your stomach. You're going to have to just push through. But you've got to take big risks if you want to go big, right? I just constantly feel sick with the risks we're taking at LV. You know, whatever. It just gets bigger and bigger. But the point is, yeah, if you do it in your 20s, if you do it before you have any responsibilities, that's a much better time generally to
take risks. So the sooner you do it, the less you have to lose.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry, back to your question.
And I totally agree with you. I think that's, we all, you know, make mistakes as much as you can when you're young because you are able to make those mistakes. When you're older and you've got commitments and you've got mortgages to pay and kids to look after and all these different things, it's a lot harder to make mistakes. You're not risking everything about you, you're risking everything else.
And the problem in the UK is we learn the mantra from Google, you know, fail fast and learn. But I think we don't believe it. We just have it as a cerebral thing. We don't really accept failure in this country, whereas in the US it genuinely is like you leave university, you go and fail, and it's just cool to then talk about that failure you've had. And in this country we're not there yet, so there's this fear of failure still that persists.
I totally agree. I'm probably victim to it. A lot of people talk about things, fail, you know, do this. Yeah. And, you know, other things where and probably I'm sort of victim, as I say, hey, you know, don't care about this and don't care about that because, you know, this is going to happen. And actually, we just say it because we're probably told to say it rather than actually believing it. But I actually generally believe that failing is important because you need to fail in order to learn from it. And I think that's so important. And the other question I was is just about purpose, because I think that purpose is really important in life. And I think that a lot of people go through life without having a purpose and they just do things. We heard the statistic the other day that 65% of Americans are doing something called sleep working, which is basically where they're just working because they just work. And actually 13% like their jobs and 22% actually have a negative impact on the business and dislike their 22% of Americans, huge amount. Do you feel like you have a purpose now? Do you feel like you're doing something that you're meant to be doing and that you love what you're doing?
100%, yes. Yeah, no. Look, with LV, we are developing products that help women every day, which is just amazing. Plus, we're making shitloads of money, which is amazing.
Yeah.
We just raised $42 million.
That is incredible.
Like, we're going to be 150 people. We've got offices in 4 countries. So we're building this huge business. And I think what I'm excited about is, yes, we're going to show the world like that a new type of business is possible. Like, that's my next goal. I like to always have big, hairy, audacious goals, and that's the next one right now.
A BHAG.
Yeah, BHAG, exactly. A BHAG. But, you know, I think, as I said, I believe in the potential of tech. Yes, it can do great harm. Yes, it can do great good. The huge optimism that we had behind some of the big tech companies, they're now, you know, particularly with a big Facebook scandal at the moment, people are quite disillusioned around tech. And I think out of these ashes, there'll be a new generation. And that's my purpose now, is to show with LV that we can do that. We can have a different type of capitalism, which means you can actually have a different type of world.
We were talking just before we started recording that the last kind of 6 months for you has been the time where things perhaps have turned a corner and you've started to really enjoy yourself. And you talk there with a big smile on your face about how much you enjoy having that purpose. What is it, do you think, now that is the thing that really, really makes you smile?
Well, because at heart, I think I am a campaigner. I've always been a campaigner, and tech and business is just is a vehicle towards that. But I'm smiling just because, you know, we've gone through that period of where people thought we were crazy. You know, people were like, you're never going to get vagina tech product in retail. You're never going to get a celebrity to talk about it. You're never going to turn a profit. You know, whatever, all these things that people thought we weren't going to do. So we've kind of proved them wrong. You know, next year we're on track for 100 million revenue. And we've built this great team, so I'm just so proud, because I think the other thing about being an entrepreneur is we're never happy with where we're at.
Totally.
There's this constant like, got to do more, got to hit higher, and even the numbers that we're hitting now, I wouldn't have imagined we would have hit 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But I'm smiling, yeah, because I feel like we're in a good place. And for me personally, we all have imposter syndrome, I think, as an entrepreneur, like especially for me.
It comes up a lot.
So it took me a while, a year ago. I really wasn't sure for me as an individual what I wanted to do out of this and as part of this. And now I'm kind of this, just because of Jamie's question around purpose, I realize that's what my role is now.
It's and also in the nicest way possible, it's a bit of a fuck you to all the people who say you can't do it. And that is great, because when you have an idea and you say, well, this is good, and you get all the people who have been in the industry or been in that world for so long, they kind of go, hey, well, no, it's never going to work. You're like, well, I think it's going to work. So what gives you the right to say it's not going to work? It goes back to the same thing with our sweets. When, you know, my parents told me it wasn't going to work, or someone told us that you can't make sweets that are going to cost £2.49. That's just impossible, never going to work. work and all these different things. And actually, it irritates you because you're kind of like, well,
I'm going to prove you wrong.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're on. The other thing is, you know, as you said, you're doing 100 million revenue. That's just incredible. And when you first started, you know, making 100 grand is just like, oh my God, but 100 million is so much. Do you think as an entrepreneur, as a founder, do you think you ever get to a point where you sit back and you go, okay, we've done all right? Or are you always going to strive for more?
Always going to strive for more.
Sure.
But I think try and celebrate the wins as well along the way, right? Because always people burn out too. Like, you know, I think particularly in purpose-led companies, people are giving this extra something. Like people who join LV, you know, they've drunk the Kool-Aid, right? They give heart and soul to this. So, celebrating the wins is important as well.
And you're almost 100 people now at LV?
Yeah, we're 100 people, London, Shanghai, New York, and just opening up an R&D centre in Bristol.
How the hell do you keep up with that? How do you continue to kind of nurture those people and build
the
culture?
I don't even have 100 friends.
It's just amazing.
Do you know what I mean?
If I was
having a wedding, there wouldn't be 100 people there.
If you found a wife.
If I find a wife, exactly.
If you might need to understand a bit more about the vagina.
That's why I haven't found a wife, I think, because I know nothing about vaginas. But it's true, 100 people is so many people. So how, you know, do you know everyone? Do you get to know everyone? How do you manage that amount of people?
It's complete, my job. Like, I think you just have to recognise your job keeps changing as a CEO founder. And, you know, some of us, the four of us who were right there from the beginning, we're still there now. And we miss the early days, like the early days where like anything goes, there's no rules, there's no processes, you can do what you want. Especially for me, I come from the UN, like working in a massive bureaucratic organization. But then after the 30 people, you need to start like putting in processes and have policies and things which, you know, make it more like a normal company, right? But then your role changes. So, but the key thing is, I think startups, they grow so quickly, right? So we went from 30 to 100 this year, another 50 the next year. And it can be frenetic. And I think what I hear from other founders, which is trying not to do, is you just race so much to hire people so quickly and then you lose the culture fit, you get the wrong people in. So definitely like focusing on recruitment. And I think one thing actually, which Alex Asaley brought in right from the beginning is because he'd started Jawbone in California. Like their mentality is different. They don't really bootstrap it as much as we do here. So even though I only had £200,000, I hired two graduate engineers on basically graduate salaries. He was like, no, got to go big, got to go and hire like an expensive engineer from Dyson, even though we had nothing. And
really?
So we had to blag it on how we're going to hire this expensive engineer from Dyson.
Wow, so you headhunter, you were going to go and headhunt
the
best.
Yeah, we went, literally like my first hire, I went and headhunted John O'Toole, he's still with us now. But the point being recruitment, and your team, I'm sure everybody keeps saying that, but you just need to hire the best people. It's always more expensive than you think it's going to be. But whenever we've done that, we've not regress it.
I think it's true. And we were always taught, Jamie and I, when we first started out, that you don't hire for today. We're trying to hire for sort of 2 or 3 years ahead of where we want the business to get to. And that forced us to perhaps spend more than we wanted to spend on people. And you think, how the hell are we going to afford this person? And how are we ever going to get to that point? But eventually, I suppose, the business does catch up. And if you do just hire for today, then you're always going to stay in that place.
But also, I think what you point on there is so important to anyone who's starting out, is that you miss the old days. In a weird way, you're more content now, you're happier now, you feel great now because your business is thriving and it's exciting and it's fun and you're able to do the things that you always wanted to do at the beginning. But it's true, the for the listener, when you're starting, those are the most exciting times because you're on a shoestring budget. You can do anything you want to do because you're like, well, let's just give it a go and try it out. And for Ed, I remember Ed and I had a conversation, you know, a while ago. You know, we have 22 people working for us around about now. But it was exciting at the beginning because we said, well, let's go and make T-shirts now. Let's just go and do that. And the next day we did it, where now there are a lot more hoops to jump through and different things like that. And so it becomes, it's much more fulfilling now because people know our brand and like for you, people know your brand. But at the beginning, those are the exciting times, isn't it? It's like the sort of Wild West in a sense.
Because you're creating something out of nothing, and that is the magic of being an entrepreneur. So yes, I've gone through those periods of self-doubt, wondering if I should bring in a professional CEO, what my role is, and then realizing, yeah, the two things I am great at doing and I love doing is the campaigning and the creating something out of nothing. But for now, actually, can keep doing it at LV. Like I can just keep creating different strands within LV you're absolutely right. Those first days are the craziest, the adrenaline, the sleepless nights. It's the highs and the lows.
And the highs and also talking about it is just the best because you kind of go, hey, well, and there's nothing cooler. There's nothing cooler than us being 22, 23 years old and saying, we're entrepreneurs. that was horrific. And we totally were. We had no idea what we were doing. But I found it so great. And we made business cards because we thought this is what you did. It was very exciting. I just quickly want to touch on having a co-founder and having someone help run the business with you, because a lot, you know, the statistics say something like 72% of businesses have a co-founder. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do it because they it's nice to go on the journey with someone. It's nice to lean on financially. It's a bit easier, all these different things. But it is also so important to find the right co-founder. How did you know that your co-founder was the right person?
Yeah, and also just say I ran LV for a year before he joined.
Exactly.
And also he wasn't a typical co-founder.
Totally.
He wasn't, day to day. And I think the reason I say that is I'm actually a big proponent of doing it by yourself, at least to begin with, until you know what you need. Because so many people say that I think people go into a team of co-founders partly because of lack of confidence.
Yes.
That they can do it alone. And if you don't know what the business is, you don't know what the product is, you might have a team of people where your skills are not complementary. And I hear that again and again, particularly for non-tech entrepreneurs like myself. You bring in a CTO because you think you need them, but you don't even know what you need. So I would say, if people don't have a co-founder, I wouldn't go and actively search one just so you can have somebody to hold your hand on that journey, because there'll be lots of people. You know, what you need to do is what I did, which is find the mentors and put together a board of people who will also be advising you, and then take your time with finding that person. And then, again, I'm sounding like a pessimist, but so much goes wrong, right? So, your stats are right around the percentage of co-founders, but what percentage fall out and break up and all the rest of it. So a very boring book called Founder's Dilemma. I don't know if you've heard of that one by Wasserman, but it basically goes through, I feel like the FT has sort of business book, goes through everything that can go wrong. Every little fuck up that can happen between co-founders, it goes through. And it's very depressing. But then at least you can at least prepare yourself on how you would deal with some of these tricky issues. You know, typical problems you hear all the time. I'm putting more weight than the other person. How much equity are they getting? How much equity am I getting? I think I should be the CEO. You know, I don't know how the two of you cope with it, but it's a difficult relationship as well, right?
Ignore all of Jamie's ideas. crack on to deal with it.
Well, Ed and I were sort of extremely lucky. And you know, Ed runs the business, you know, that's Ed's very good at managing people. That's what he's very good at. And he's the one, Ed's amazing at asking the questions that no one else will ask. And I think that's really important of someone who's running the business.
But I think you're right. I think we were clear from day one on that. So in hindsight, it looks like we were smart, but we weren't. It was just,
it was a mistake.
We were lucky enough that we had that conversation, right at the very beginning and split the responsibilities and have stuck to it really quite rigidly since then.
Yeah, I mean, I would say one thing, I think choosing your co-founder is like choosing an investor. With both of them, like, just take your time, be confident enough to trial them out and check that what they're saying actually translates into actions, because people often promise the moon, right?
Yeah.
And back to one of your questions you had earlier, have we ever turned down investors? Yeah, because first of all, for ethical points of view, there's a lot of money out there that I think is unethical. So I think you need to look at where the money's come from. But also just when I, there's been a couple of people where I haven't turned them down, and it can be such a pain in the arse as well. So,
and also, again, we say the same thing. Once you give away equity, you can't get it back. It's very hard to get back. So make sure you know who you're giving it to. Tony, also, there's one question that I do want to ask, which is, it's kind of a cheesy question, but I think it's also important. Throughout, you know, having grown your business, having throughout your life, what is the biggest piece of advice that you now live by?
Live by, I'd say, you know, life's short, make the most of it. Don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Again, I'm going to say it one more time, that this talk last night was just really interesting. But Joanna said, you know, she's only 26 years old. She said, you know, at the end of the day, life will go on with or without you. Yeah. So make the most of it, because if you, you know, it will continue. So when you know that life will continue, you kind of got to sort of go, okay, right, let's get on and do it.
And it sounds like, Jamie, you've kind of searching for a purpose at the moment, or finding one.
I think purpose for me, I think I found the purpose of what I want to do, and I think we're living it as well. I think that actually this is why this podcast is so great, because we get to talk to individuals like yourself and talk to loads of different people and actually hopefully inspire the young generation. And I think, going back to that selfish thing, I think I was selfish for a long time because I just was. And I think actually that life is about being selfless and actually inspiring and talking and spreading the word and actually helping others. I think that's what's so great about life, that actually it's not about you, it's about others. People say the best friendship is giving rather than receiving. And I think that's so true. And it's all about giving. That's what I think. It sounds very moral of me, but I actually think it is.
Jamie, obviously very moved by last night's event.
Yeah.
I think Jamie's discovering something called love.
Yeah. I think that's what it is.
I think that's what it is.
So thank you so much, Tony. Yeah. It's been so, so interesting anyway to hear all about LV and your journey in the femtech world. It's a fascinating story and you're obviously doing a great job. We ask every single guest before they leave us one of the same questions, and that is, if you were to start a completely new business tomorrow, what would that be?
I'm just going to write it down. Yeah.
So we're disrupting women's health. So I think actually men's health is probably what needs to be disrupted.
Yeah.
So actually, something I used to tell investors when they ask me, what's your next product? I always say, oh yeah, we're disrupting Viagra. Right. You're like, can I write the check, please?
I love it. Janet, honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on Move. I hope you had a fun time, and please come back.
It's been great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. Do you know why I love doing this podcast, Ed? Is because we get different people from different walks of life, from different businesses, from everything different, telling us about different things. And the fact that Tanya shared her story of how she built LV, where her kind of inspiration came from, was fascinating. I had no idea about how huge femtech is.
No, I mean, I guess, hopefully, just like us, some of the listeners at home have learned about something completely new today that, like you say, otherwise we probably just would never have talked about. Really, really interesting story. And I think, so brave to go and challenge something that is such a taboo and such an issue that perhaps people kind of feel a little bit embarrassed about. As Tanya was saying, even as a woman, you don't necessarily have the confidence or knowledge to go and talk about these things that are your body and really affecting your life. So, yeah, I mean, amazing story. What an incredible business. Clearly having a big impact.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go and check out LV, an incredible business. Go and check out Tanya as well. What an inspirational person. Love the episode today. Thank you to Tanya for coming on Move.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening. Honestly, it really does mean a huge amount. And we also hope today's podcast has inspired you to move towards your dream or passion. Now, if you like the podcast, please subscribe and leave us a comment. And if you'd like to get in touch, please email us at move@moveclub.co.uk or follow us on Instagram @moveclub. Until next time, this is Move.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.